Well, I think when we're teaching kids to give each other feedback, there's a really important role, not only as being the receiver of feedback and then learning to use that in a positive and integral way to make themselves better learners, but also to provide really good feedback. So teaching them to identify things that they're looking for and then giving them stems or ideas to start giving really good actionable feedback to their peers so that the teacher isn't necessarily responsible for making sure that every kid in the classroom gets feedback every single day. It certainly makes sure everybody gets the feedback, and it also makes sure that the teacher can oversee what's going on to really help maybe the kids who need it the most in different situations.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning Podcast. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with educators, leaders, and change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. Welcome, everyone, to the Rethinking Learning Podcast series. Today, I have the most amazing person, Star Saxton. I just love her. I'm so glad she's here with me. And I want to tell you a little bit about her first. Star is Director of Humanities K-12 in West Hempstead Union Free School District in New York. She's Social Media Manager of ESET2 and manages the Twitter account to build the brand as the voice of ESET2 National. She's also the author of several, I want to say many, amazing books on education, and some of the topics are going gradeless, peer feedback, blogging. I have many of them. I got to read all of them, and we're going to talk about some of them today. Welcome, Star.
Thanks so much for having me, Barbara.
Oh, it's just wonderful. So I always like to find out a little bit about you first. So can you share, a little bit about you, your son, who I'm following for years, and, just your life of being a teacher, what it's been like?
Well, I've been in education for 16 years now, and I can honestly say that it has been an adventure, a learning adventure every single day that I've been doing it. I'm super proud to be a teacher and an educator, and this is the first year that I'm now an administrator. So being a school leader is very different than being a teacher in the classroom, and I miss my kids every day right now. So I'm just hoping that the transition is one that is smooth and that I begin to love working with teachers the same way I love to work with kids. And fortunately, even though I'm a central office person now, I am housed in the high school, so I am around kids in a building, and I do get to stop into classrooms and see what's going on, and that's my favorite part of it every day. I'm back in grad school, too, getting my leadership license, so I'm in SUNY New Paltz getting an advanced certification in education administration. And my son has just started middle school now. He's in seventh grade.
No.
I know. It's crazy.
He's grown so much. I can't believe it. Well, I talked to you a few years ago, and I know you didn't want to leave the classroom. I know how much you love the kids. So maybe there's some ways you can combine it. And when you're walking around, there's some things you can do with teachers with the kids.
I have already offered. Basically, anything that is going to be a big change for the teachers. I've offered my services. So if they're not used to doing student-centered classrooms, I said, I'll come in if you need eyes. If you're going to take a risk with something, then I would love to be a part of that to help out. So,
oh, I hope they take you up on it, because
me too.
I know. I mean, I've seen and shared so many of your stories from the classroom. And what you've done with questions, what you've done about homework, all of those wonderful things. So I hope they take you up. So why don't you tell me a little bit about this new job? What is your responsibilities?
So I am responsible for the English department, the social studies department, the world language department, and the business departments, K-12. The idea is that by making a humanities department, instead of keeping them all separate, is that we could have one interdisciplinary unit that starts to integrate learning for kids so that they start making those connections a little bit more concretely, as they're learning. hopefully shifting toward a project-based atmosphere where teachers are collaborating so that the kids get the benefit of those collaborations.
So they're going to do some projects, like integrated project-based learning activities around those. So it's all encompassing all those subjects.
Right. I mean, I don't think right away. I think that's the ultimate goal, because the school district is definitely, they're not where the city was. So a lot of the stuff that I am doing is new. It's going to be new for them. So baby steps. And I think if I could get them to start thinking in terms of student-centered learning first, before I start to really integrate the bigger steps of getting the more integrated content area. Because in the high school especially, they have so many exams they have to adhere to still. And I know that that's going to be a challenge for a lot of the teachers.
Okay, I'm just going off. I'm veering off for just a second, because I know that you talked about gradeless and no homework. I mean, is that another thing that you're going to try to encourage West Hempstead to do?
So the central office knows that that's my gig. And when I got hired, they certainly knew that that was something that I was interested in. The district is very traditional. So when I have independent conversations with people and we talk about assessment, I usually sort of drop it in a little bit. We do have a very large ENL population at the school. So homework seems less of an issue because they don't have the kind of supports they need at home anyway. So a lot of teachers just aren't giving homework. And the ones that are going to be encouraged to do a little less of that, especially on the middle school and high school level. And eventually, I think they started talking about changing report cards in the elementary schools to be more standards-based. But New York State just changed their standards again. So we're kind of waiting a little bit more till those standards are actually out there. And then we're going to start the process, I think, maybe in the next year or two.
So where is West Hempstead? I mean, where is it?
It's southwestern Nassau County on Long Island. So it's only about 3.5 miles from my house.
That sounds so good, because I remember it was a little tough the other way. So how do you do this? I mean, I know how much you write. How do you balance? Well, actually, I did want to talk about your work, but I do want to ask you this question first. Is how you balance your life, your work, and all the things you've done.
I'm not really good at balancing, to be honest with you, but I'm getting better at it. I got engaged this summer, and basically having someone I want to spend time with at home aside from my son certainly forces me to shut the books every once in a while, put my phone on the side, and start having some really discrete lines between where work is happening and where home is happening. And I had some real vacations this summer too, where I wasn't working at all, and I really enjoyed them. I enjoyed not being on the grid. So I think I'm going to try it a little more.
Well, good for you, because I know how hard you work, and congratulations. I've seen the pictures on Facebook, and you look so happy. I'm so happy for you. You know, one of the things that I saw that I thought was really cool is you challenge yourself all the time. And one of them was that TED Talk.
Oh my God.
I know. And I'm just going to tell you the name of it: A Recovering Perfectionist Journey to Give Up Grades. I'm going to take that video if you want and embed it, because we're going to make a blog that goes with this. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell a little bit about it? Because it is kind of, you told me some things and I thought it was kind of cute.
Well, I mean, public speaking for me is always a little bit of a challenge, because I'm like almost painfully shy. So it's one of those things where over the years, I've certainly gotten better at it. I still feel like I'm going to throw up when I walk in front of people. But, you know, I'm really passionate about what I talk about. So once I kind of get over that initial fear of getting in front of a crowd of people, it kind of alleviates. And with the TED Talk, ironically, it was a 12-minute talk. So by like minute 7 is when I started feeling comfortable. And I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then it was over. So I tried really hard to like prepare super well for it. And just kind of share a story that I thought was important for people when they're thinking about assessment.
Well, I thought you did really good, but you told me that you dropped your cards.
I did. And the pages were out of order.
And the pages were out of order, but no one knew. I can tell you, just watching it, I never knew.
So I was like,
how did you do that? So I think you get better the more you do. And when you feel, like you said, halfway in, you start feeling a little bit better. But I was impressed.
Thank you.
So I read most of your books. I've read yours too. We have a mutual, you know, how we have this mutual admiration society here. But I still don't get it how you do this, because when you look at the volumes of books you've done and all the stories and things that you put out there, I'm just floored. So I had to figure out which ones we're going to talk about. And is the latest one Hacking Homework, or is there another one I don't know about?
Peer Feedback in the Classroom is the most recent.
Okay, so let's talk about that one first. So Peer Feedback in the Classroom. How does feedback play a powerful role, you know, in not only for the kids, but maybe for the teachers too?
Well, I think when we're teaching kids to give each other feedback, there's a really important role, not only as being the receiver of feedback and then learning to use that in a positive and integral way to make themselves better learners, but also to provide really good feedback. So teaching them to identify things that they're looking for and then giving them stems or ideas to start giving really good actionable feedback to their peers so that the teacher isn't necessarily responsible for making sure that every kid in the classroom gets feedback every single day. It certainly makes sure everybody gets the feedback, and it also makes sure that the teacher can oversee what's going on to really help maybe the kids who need it the most in different situations.
Well, I like it that the idea it's peer feedback. And so I've incorporated that in the work I've done to also, because I think it's really important for kids to feel like not only are they receiving information, they're sharing and providing input. So they're like a critical friend.
Mm-hmm, and exactly.
So I'm so glad you put this book together, because I know so many teachers that could use this right now. So that's one I don't have yet. So I'll have to get that one and share it out. And you probably put a lot of tips in there too.
Mm-hmm. It basically breaks down the culture you need to cultivate in your space so that it can happen. It breaks down how to model the behaviors kids are going to need to emulate. It breaks down how to create expert groups, which is how I really ran it, peer workshops in my class. And then it also talks about how to make them endure over time. So building the peer expert groups and then also using them in classes for different things, and then encouraging kids to become experts in more than one area.
I'm thinking that this is going to be one that will really help your teachers that you're working with.
I hope so. You know, it's such a fine line, Barbara, that I don't know when it's appropriate to bring in stuff that I know as an expert and when it becomes a little pushy to be using my own material when I'm working with people, because I don't want to come off like a know-it-all or that, you know, this is what I've done. And my administration know the books are out there. Some of my colleagues know the books are out there, but I always feel a little weird in the place where I live to, like, you know, like, do it. So, I mean, maybe I would promote it in the space. I know that for the faculty meetings that I'm going to be leading for the department, I really plan on modeling the behaviors I hope to see them using in class, differentiating, giving good collaboration time, not speaking too much in front of the space, but more spreading them out. And I'm hoping to get some peer expert groups happening in those department meetings so that maybe that would be the entryway to really tell them that this is something you could do with your kids too.
Well, you're smart doing that, because sometimes you're never a prophet in your own land. You have to kind of come in a different way, and you want to be able to just share ideas with them. And someone else might say, hey, by the way, you might want to look at these books and even have a library of the books available for them. So another
I have them in the office. You know what I mean? They're kind of like buried among the other books that I have in the office. But I'm weird about that kind of stuff. It's not to say that I'm not really proud of what I've done, but like, it always feels really weird to be somewhat self-promotional, even if it's great ideas and people are getting so much from them. I don't want to be the person that hands my book to one of my teachers and says, you should really read this. You know, I mean,
yeah, I know exactly how you feel. I've done coaching, and the last thing I want to do is come across as someone who knows something when I'm really, they're the ones doing all the hard work, and they, you know, you're there to support them, model it. And if they want some other information, these are resources they could look at.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So another book that you did, which I think is a little controversial, but I love it, is The Hacking Homework, the one that you wrote with Connie Hamilton.
I love Connie. She's one of my favorite people.
Well, how cool that you both could write together. Because
yeah.
If you know, that it's a lot of work to put a book together. And mm-hmm. It's nice when you have that relationship.
We actually didn't have the relationship before we started. Writing the book together is what made the relationship.
Really?
She invited herself to my house, and we spent a weekend writing together, and it was the first time we met in person.
Oh, my gosh. That's perfect. That's mm-hmm. how they should grow. It's like you build those relationships from, it could be professional relationship, but they kind of grow. I become friends with so many people because that's who I am. I can't help it. I find something and then you want to know more about them. And what next thing, you're writing a book. So let's talk about that book. Why is the homework debate ending? Why do you think it's ending?
I think that so many people, like, there's a lot of folks still stuck in the old regime, and they do things a certain way just because that's the way they've always done them. And I really feel that homework falls into that category. And people who will say kids need homework to be more responsible or they need to be held accountable, there's really no research out there, especially at the primary level, that suggests homework does anything to promote learning. As a matter of fact, in those formative years, kids really need to be playing more. They need to be engaging in their environment. And if we do certain things in our spaces, we won't have to send kids home. Plus, there's such a discrepancy with the kind of help and support kids have at home. If you're working in a district that isn't a high socioeconomic district, you're going to end up with kids whose parents are working all the time or speak a different language. And there's really a divide. There's a gap with the kind of help. And then, you know, on the higher end, like where I grew up, my mom used to do all my brother's homework, like all of it. She used to do his project. She used to do, like, so I think about that. You just, at home, you just don't know whose work you're getting when it comes back. And to then be crazy enough to assess that work and use that as a part of a grade, that's even crazier to me. So, I mean, maybe by the time you get to high school, you can assign work that gets done over a period of time, and then the kids kind of have to map out when it's good for them to do it. But regular, daily, nightly homework is really a waste of time, in my opinion.
Well, I know my kids, Andrew and Sarah, they got a lot of worksheets because they, and I always tried to figure out why. And we did another,
so bad.
Another thing we do in California is, every fourth grader does a mission. So I helped make the mission. So if you have a parent that's going to, they're competitive because they show them off. And that's not learning. That's not what the kids are learning. And sometimes it becomes discourse at home because you're yelling at the kids to get it done. And that's not how it should be. So I love that you and Connie did this and put this together. But it does change mindsets because some districts, they're so adamant. It might be a take, like you said, little bites, little steps to move there. And, you know, you did mention in your book a few places that you can inspire kids other ways outside of the classroom.
Absolutely. And I think kids don't recognize the stuff they're doing outside of their own spaces is educational. So, I mean, it's just about making them aware of the fact that if they're cooking with their mom for dinner, or they're doing laundry, or there's mathematics that go into those kinds of things, if they're working on measuring with fractions, or if they're doing a load of laundry and they have to figure out time or how much of the detergent to put in, or even reading directions so they don't ruin something expensive, or if they're outside exploring, playing in the dirt, picking up rocks, or, you know, even sports and games and all these things that kids do, the imaginative play that happens between friends outside, that's all stuff that helps them become better learners and better people. And I think we have to broaden our idea of what learning is outside of school and inside of school, so that, you know, we're not just looking at those worksheets, which are an atrocious waste of time. And they're ruining the environment when we do that too. You don't need to make those photocopies, and it's just, it's horrible.
Well, I agree. And the smell is terrible. I remember the old Ditto machines that I used to do, but what I see that more schools are starting to do is encourage conversations at home.
Yes.
Not just, what did you do in school? Nothing, you know, kind of thing. It's like, how do you talk to your child and bring that in? So I see that school and outside of school can blend.
Yes.
There's some really wonderful things. So I'm going to be putting a link to all of your books in the blog. And, you know, just curious, are you writing another book?
Well, Mark Barnes is definitely trying to get me to do a second hacking assessment book that goes a little deeper. And I will be going to Canada next month to work with a district that the entire district is going gradeless, K to 12.
Wow.
So I would love to do a case study about what that looks like over time. That's something I'm thinking about, at least a series of blog posts where I could get some of the teachers who are partaking in that experience to participate in. I did write a pitch to ASCB because the peer feedback book is with ASCB. So I kind of owe them another title at some point. And we talked about doing a student voice book, but not until 2019. I have way too much going on right now in the primary job that, you know, I can't even think about putting the time aside to sit down and write right now. Because I'm still learning so much. I mean, I'm taking a school law class right now, and I'm taking a current issues class right now on top of everything else. So I have to write a law paper that's 20 pages long that I'm really not looking forward to. But.
Well, we did talk in the beginning of the podcast about balance, and you know, you just got engaged, you're at a new job. So, you know, I think it is, you have to almost have to pull back a little bit and just kind of look at your life and say, how can I manage all of this? And what is the best way that it's going to help me do what I want to do best? And so I really love that I love the idea of the case study. I love that because people don't know what that means to be gradeless.
There's so many more people doing it now, though. Like, there's, aside from the group that Mark Barnes and I do, the teachers throwing out grades, there's another T2G group that came out kind of on the heels of teachers throwing out grades. And there are a lot more people in a lot more subject areas and a lot more places doing it now. And they're sharing their stories. And I feel like it's really bringing a lot of legitimacy to this idea that learning doesn't need to be labeled for it to be real learning. And honestly, if the message doesn't have to come from me for it to be good. It's so good to see so many people doing it now and experimenting in a way that kind of suits the environments that they're all in. And usually whenever I hear somebody's doing it and they reach out to me on Twitter, I'm very eager to help and be supportive in whatever way that I can be. And, you know, I'll still speak. I'll still keynote when the opportunities arise, and I'll still go in and do consulting work with groups who are really serious about making these changes. And I don't think I'll be going to as many conferences as I've gone to in years past to speak. But I have been contracted before I got this job. I had signed several contracts. So my school is honoring those contracts. I'll be at Learning and the Brain in November in Boston. And, this year I had to back out of BLC at the last minute, but Alan November has always been very, very, very good to me. So I can't complain in that regard. So maybe I'll do BLC next year in the summertime when he does it.
Well, it's just a matter of choosing what's the most appropriate, especially with everything on your plate. Well, you're an amazing person. I'm just so honored to know you, Star. I really love this. And when you tell me I'm not going to do very much, and then you had a long list here, I'm sitting here trying to say it's just amazing, because all of us can learn from you. And I look forward to reading all of your books and reviewing them. And maybe you'll have, is there a teacher that throws out grades, T2G chat?
There is a T2G chat that is happening now, I think, on Sunday nights. I have, they've invited me in because I know they read the peer feedback book over the summer. And I know that there's going to be, they're going to do a chat around that at some time in the fall that I told them I would participate in. But even that, I mean, with ESET too, I'm one of the moderators on the Sunday night chat for that.
Yeah, I want to know about that.
ESET stands for Elevating and Celebrating Teachers and Teaching. That's what the ESET 2 stands for. And it's really just about teacher leadership and getting more teachers involved in those leadership roles and kind of seeing themselves as advocates for kids and for educational agendas that need to be pushed to move education in the right direction. And this week, Connie is actually going to be our guest moderator on Sunday. I'm pretty excited about that. She's going to be doing listening.
What time is it on Sunday?
8 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay. So we can put that in the blog post, and maybe we'll get some people to come. But thank you so much, Star. I could talk to you all day long.
This is so sweet.
Just wonderful. I just want to make sure, did I leave anything out that you want to share? Or?
Oh, no. I'm easy to find on Twitter if people want to reach out. And regardless of how much I've done, there's so much more to do. So I'm always interested in collaborations and learning from other people also. And, I always have time to answer people's questions. So if they read something and they have questions, they can always reach out to me.
Well, we'll put your Twitter handle. That's how I kind of got to know you really well. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll do a Twitter chat together. And because we've done that in the past. Yeah. I'm just really grateful that you had the time to share all the wonderful things you're doing, especially with this new direction and your new life. So thank you so much.
It was great to see you, Barbara. I hope we get to meet in person one day soon.
Yes. So thank you, Star. Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for joining Rethinking Learning Podcast with Star Saxton. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning Podcast and my conversation with Star Saxton. Make sure you visit BarbaraBray.net to learn more about Star, her projects, and all the books she's written. And also look for a complimentary blog post that goes along with this with links and resources. So please subscribe so you don't miss any of the conversations.